crackheads. How you doing? It's Friday. You know what that means. It's the crack. Yeah, we're back again. I know it means a lot to you guys to tune into us and talk to us on Fridays, and it means a lot to us as well. And I gotta say at the top of the show, because I forgot to say it for weeks, we have our own feed now on Spotify and Apple Music. Apple Podcasts, Apple Music, one of them. So please go ahead and like and review the feeds, the crack with Petey Carroll it's called, but you know it's not just with Petey Carroll. It's with a couple of other guys who I'll bring in now in a minute. But before they come in, there was a huge deal the Crack Podcast signed just a couple of days ago, which means I need to plug the big show the guys are doing May 8th in New York City. Tickets still available. It sells out every time. Okay, we couldn't come to a deal to get me to New York City. I mean, we were going back over it over and over again, but believe me, it's still going to be a good show. The other members of the team are really good too. It's not just about me, okay? Ariel Helwani will be there. I mean, they called the show after the guy. I mean, he's a pretty big deal. GC, Rick, Mysterious Frank, Jordan, who is back on the crack today. Back on the crack. And there is also special guests. Watch the crack first, then go to that show, okay? Everyone stays happy then. Lads, how are yous? Jordan's been on vacation. He brought yous in a bit too early there, I feel. You know, I wanted to set it up a bit more. Oh, here's Ben, here's Chuck. Doesn't care. He's just come in. He signed a new deal to produce the crack. And honestly, I think it's gone to his head. He's just run it the way he wants to. These are not the special guests. These are the weekly hosts, Jordan, okay? It's just been 2 months, mate, okay? Chuck, how are you, mate? Denver Broncos. I mean, Denver Nuggets.
No, man. I like to think I'm special. That was rough stuff last night. I'm not feeling too good today. But I think Ben has, like, he had some problems, and he came on here a couple weeks ago, and I know you've been hungover a couple times. I'm definitely not going to miss the show just because of one stupid season that just got blown up, you know, and maybe a team and a dynasty that just got blown up. I'm over that stuff already.
You know, Ariel always says, like, once you've won one, he hasn't, by the way, with Bills or the Knicks.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known that. Yeah.
He says, once you've won one, it doesn't matter anymore. Do you feel that right now? Are you like, doesn't matter. I won one a couple of years ago.
Ben, how you doing, buddy? You're looking good.
You guys talking about basketball, the sport of basketball? They still do that? They do it. I didn't know. Is that still going on?
Not anymore. Season ended last night.
Let me tell you, I just want to know this. Are they skating full speed and launching their shoulders at one another's heads? Because that's what they're doing in the NHL playoffs, my friend.
Yeah.
That stuff gets heated over there. I sent you, Petey, some videos as I'm trying to get you into the NHL playoffs, get you into NHL hockey in general. And the thing is, every time I watch the playoffs, the amount of just abuse these people are heaping on each other, I don't understand how there's anybody left to play the Stanley Cup Finals. It's absolutely insane what these people are doing together. I also like it because it is one of the few sports out there where you can see like a 35-year-old man, adult father with kids and a mortgage, and he's out there yelling at a 20-year-old, I will kill you. Just yelling it over and over again, and it's perfectly acceptable. Everybody's like, yep, that's just part of the game.
You know what? It's an incredible segue you've just gifted me with there with these outlandish statements ice hockey players are saying, because we've had some outlandish statements ourselves, not just this week, but in general across MMA. Sean Strickland is the guy this week, guys. Not all too surprising, if you know Sean Strickland's thing. I know it says in the subject line of the show, has it gone too far? Evidently not. Like, I think we're all clear that this is par for the course now in MMA. But in case some of you have not seen what Sean Strickland has recently said about Khamzat Chimaev, let's give them a bit of that, please, Jordan, if you can.
He's already talking about, nice, like, oh, if you guys run into each other, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, he'll have his friends with him. You won't have any.
I'm going to pull my gun out of my shoe.
Okay, good tonight.
I love goats, dude. You know, goat tastes good. He loves goats. We have that in common. I just don't fuck him. If he were to come up to me like a man, say, you know what, Sean, you said some things about my dad, Kudarov. And I'm like, well, you know what, dude? You whored yourself out, not me. I want to settle this. I would say, let's settle this like a man. But if you come up to me with three fucking goat fucker Chechens that don't speak English, I'm going to pull my gun and I'm going to shoot each and every one of you.
All right, well, I think that's a fair war. even said if you jump him, he's going to shoot you guys and stuff like that. Has anything he said pissed you off or upset you?
Bro, he didn't shoot any chickens in the world, bro. How are we going to shoot a human?
Strong. Are there any security concerns for you, like, leading up to this? Have you talked to your team about, like, you know, watching your back a little differently? He's, you know, obviously made some serious threats. Ariel Helwani was even saying, like, hey, we're worried about how this can go down. Where's your head at? That's just all noise?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. The guy wants a real war outside of the cage, so if he wanted, he would be dead already.
Positive stuff here. We should say there has been some tweets recently. Thank you to New York Rick for garnishing with them. Do we have them, Jordan? The Strickland tweet and subsequent reply, or shall I read them? Oh, here it is. Great. The UFC is trying to limit my interactions with the dog. Listen, I will say this now. I will not be controlled by a third world dog. If I find there is unequal treatment between our camps, I will walk to the lobby and wait for him. Control your whore or don't. I don't care. Let the chips fall where they may. This is America. And a reply to a comment that says, Sean is never one to hold back. This fight week is getting intense already! Exclamation mark. Sean says, the fight week will be me in handcuffs. The fact there is this goat fucker who shouldn't even be allowed to be in America making threats. You think I give a flying fuck about some stupid goat fucker? And that, just in the last 30 minutes or so, guys. Well, good time. You know. Yeah. I know.
Chuck, I enjoyed Pizzi had to read this. I just know. Had to sit here and just report all this like it's serious stuff.
One of my best reading segments, I feel. Yeah. I really nail that kind of stuff. Maybe this is my speed. Chuck, you wrote a hilarious article about this. And I think the tone of it was right because, you know, I think we're far beyond, like, clutching pearls with this stuff. This is kind of commonplace. But you've put it in a way that had me LOLing, as the kids would say. Please go and read this article if you can. But what is your reaction to this? This Sean Strickland's latest tirade against Hamzat Chimaev.
I mean, it kind of feels like you guys tell me like the Thelma and Louise moment, like where it's like at the end and she's, you know, we're just going to go out in a blaze of glory type thing. It almost has that feel to it. Like he's like, I'm going to walk out of there in handcuffs. I'm going to be, you know, all the stuff he's saying. I'd like to think, and the point I was thinking when I was writing this piece, because I saw Ariel and the boys kind of, and you talking about this, and, you know, you're almost like torn between, should we be concerned, you know, or is there something bad's going to happen? You start remembering, obviously, the most obvious comparison, which was Habib versus McGregor and how dark that fight got. This one hasn't really tipped over yet, but we're not even to fight week and we're already having this discussion, right? Like we're still like, what, 7-8 days away from it and we're having this discussion. I just don't know if we built up an immunity towards him. Like, I really think that we have to an extent, because when you go back, man, when I was writing that article, I was like, what, I mean, you kind of forget. It's almost like the Trump administration, like you have to kind of like, okay, wait, there was this, this, and this, and that's how we got to here. Like, it's one of those type of things with Sean Strickland, because, you know, you forget, you know, event to event, like the thing that happened in Toronto with like, with Alex Lee, you know what I'm talking about, when he was going at him and saying he was weak and all that stuff, the reporter.
Yes.
And you kind of forget each step as it goes. And there's always this kind of redeeming moment. He goes on Theo Vaughn and he talks about like his rough childhood, his father being a boogeyman in the house, and his sentiment kind of, you know, swings a little bit in his favor. And then you get right back into this and it just kind of reopens up. So I just don't know if I take it so seriously. I guess that's why I wanted there to be a levity to the piece. But there should be a little bit of a concern from the UFC's standpoint. Of the sense, like, we've seen things kind of escalate in the past where it's like you start dragging in religion, you start dragging in, you know, national stuff where your families, you start dragging that stuff in, that can play a man's emotions. Even as calm as Chimaev looked in that piece of video, the B-boys looked pretty calm too, up until the moment he, like, Talon swooped Talon Danis off the cage. You know what I'm like? Those type of things kind of fester in a guy. And I just, Your whole thing now is, and maybe this is a stroke of brilliance on some level for the voyeurs who love to see the sport from a certain angle, what happens during their encounters during fight week. I mean, that does to me seem like part of the drama of this whole buildup. But as far as Sean Strickland stuff, nothing he says at this point should shock us. And honestly, just like anybody else who's very audacious with their opinions and what they're saying out there, you gotta like let it go in one ear and out the other, right? Like you would not be able to piece together why the guy is able to do this in the UFC if you didn't see the whole picture the way it is with Dana and everything else too.
Yeah, it's commonplace. You know, we had the Bryce Mitchell Hitler thing just not so long ago, right? And that was another kind of hot topic moment where everyone's kind of weighing in on it. And it's funny today because when we were having this conversation with Ariel on Wednesday, we were kind of talking about all of the threats and things like that. One thing I asked Ariel is like, what does this do for the perception of MMA when things like this constantly happen here and they don't seem to happen in other sports? And he was like, well, it would confirm any detractors, what they think of it. This would just underline and confirm what they already think. I saw a clip today before we came on and I knew we were going to talk about this. And it was like a short on YouTube. You know when you're just scrolling? And you're like, you know the way they have your brain these days. And it was like, you won't believe what this soccer player said after he gained promotion for his team. And it's this guy and he's like smoking a cigarette, smoking a cigar while he's doing an interview. And at the end, he was just like, I just want to say I fucking love my teammates. And that was the shocking moment. He said, wow. You know? And I was like, compared to what we're going to be talking today, this is crazy. And that's what I'm thinking, Ben. I'm like, when I was growing up, if I met a kid, like I'm from a working class area, if I met a kid and he said he was a big rugby fan, that would say to me that he was from a middle class background, he's from an upper class situation. If I meet a guy who says he likes dog fighting, I'm like, oh, well, this guy is a scumbag. What does it mean that this sport, this is commonplace, and it has a lot of support for it too. Like even from our conversation the other day, you look through the comments, you guys are weak for saying that this is a bit aggressive. What do people in America think of when they think of MMA, do you think, in general, outside of the MMA bubble?
I guess my thought was, what do they think when they hear stuff like this? Is they mostly don't hear it. A lot of this stuff stays inside the MMA bubble. And there are a lot of times over the years that I've been very glad that we are up to weird shit in the MMA bubble. And the general population, for the most part, does not know that. They don't know what we're up to. And it's good that they don't know what we're up to because some of it reflects poorly on us. The thing I do wonder is a little bit about, like, where's the UFC at on stuff like this? And what are they telling themselves behind closed doors? Because they used to take a very different approach to shit like this. I remember very clearly, Chuck, you were around, and you probably remember this, where during the sort of ongoing on and off feud between Brock Lesnar and Frank Mir, Frank Mir got in a lot of trouble at one point because he said that he hated Brock Lesnar so much, right, he would like to see him be the first person to die in the octagon. He would like to kill him. And like, and Brock Lesnar had said something about Frank Mir where he's like, I want to fucking kill him. And and I remember I did an interview with Frank Mir for a story on Sports Illustrated. And I asked him about that, where I was just kind of like, do you think that people are overreacting to those comments? Like he said something, you know, like we're used to this trash talk where it's just, is it a different thing to say, I'm going to kill this guy, to where then you say, I'm going to actually literally murder this guy? Like, are those just different things? And we talked about it a little bit. He was kind of saying, yeah, I don't see what the big deal is. And the UFC got really upset at him. It seemed like basically maybe the UFC had told him, don't talk about this anymore. And then he did. And I remember the UFC PR people called me up to basically be like, did Frank really say this? And I was like, what do you think? I'm fabricating this quote for the story. Like, not only did he say it, I got it on tape that he said it. Like, of course he said it. And it wasn't anything any really crazy, provocative, but they were that upset about it. And I think he lost his WEC commentary gig over it. They really took that stuff very seriously. And that was probably, you know, 15-ish years ago. And now they got to a point where they just kind of went, ah, to hell with it. You know, like, let them go. And I don't know how much of that is that the UFC got tired of policing this stuff. The same way for a while they toyed around with the idea of a code of conduct. Right. And then they seemed to decide, well, if you put out a code of conduct, then sooner or later, and probably sooner, you're going to have to enforce that code of conduct against somebody you don't want to enforce it against, somebody that you want out there selling pay-per-views or selling tickets for you. and you're going to be called upon to maintain some consistency there. And they didn't want to do that. They wanted to have the freedom to decide, when do we act outraged and care about this stuff? And when do we just say, hey, freedom of speech, brother, tune in, see them get their ass kicked if you don't like it. And they seemed to decide like that was the way to go. Like just really hands off, let it run and let it take you wherever it goes. And then also let the blame fall on the individual fighters when it gets out of hand. They managed to do that very well, to like kind of step back and be like, hey, that's on them, you know, for getting out of hand with some of this stuff. And I do think that at least some of it has to be that just culturally, broadly in America, there's been a huge shift in what is deemed acceptable and unacceptable behavior, speech, viewpoints, all that stuff. I teased this to you, PC, when we were talking earlier about the idea of the Overton window, which Please. Basically refers to an idea that a policy analyst, Joseph Overton, came up with, where he's just sort of like, there's this acceptable range of viewpoint, of ways of speaking, of ideas that can kind of be introduced in polite society. And the window can shift. The window can widen, it can narrow, it can shift in one direction or another. But there are some ideas where it's just like, you know, you come out there and you say, hey, I think we should be doing school funding slightly differently. And you're like, okay, that's very middle. Like, no one's worried that you haven't expressed an extreme viewpoint out there. But if you're just like, I think all the races should be kept separate, they're like, okay, nope, that's not a thing that we even feel is worth discussing. That is a radical viewpoint. You're outside of the window. We don't even need to talk to you. We don't need to listen to you. And for a long time, that's how, like, especially a media environment operated. And it just doesn't anymore. It just, the window has shattered to the point where it's like you have people on TV talking about crazy stuff. Some of it is, I'm sure, like a technological platform issue, where for all the stuff that we would talk about the downsides of like deplatforming, there being these sort of specific platforms that people could be kept off of or invited onto. One of the upsides was that it allowed you sort of like a little bit more control over not letting crazy ideas enter a mainstream, like, serious debate. And I think we saw, once we went through the pandemic, we saw how there could be some people who were just like, I don't believe any of this is real. Other people could just be like, I've made up my own medicine, I will take that instead of something else. And we saw, like, okay, there are very real effects to having these conversations that just go in all different directions. And it gets a lot harder to be like, hey, this is some shit you shouldn't say. This is some shit that is dangerous. This is some shit that we've decided, like, hey, this is not how we should be talking to each other. And we've completely abandoned that idea now. And you see it now with the UFC. Like, the Bryce Mitchell-Hitler stuff was where we saw the UFC was going to take the approach, hey, whatever they say, that's on them. If it makes you mad, maybe it'll make you more interested in watching. We're going to bet on that anyway. It's the easier way to go for us. The thing that's crazy to me about sitting here talking about shooting each other with guns is I'm like, my dudes, you are in one of the rare lines of work where you get to hurt each other. You get paid, you get rewarded for hurting each other. The whole point of stuff like fight sports and martial arts is so that you can engage in this sort of combat and nobody dies. The idea that, like, you are going to spend all your life training as a fighter and then you're going to show up with a gun a few days before the fight and shoot the guy. Well, first of all, you don't get paid then. That's the thing you can guarantee. The other thing is that then you go to prison instead of getting paid to hurt him in a sanctioned fashion. It's just dumb. It's dumb. And, like, it, especially at a time when, like, one of our big problems in America is gun violence. And you have a guy out here being like, I'm so mad, I'm going to shoot him. And people are expected to, like, sit around and be like, awesome, that's a great headline, let's go with that. That'll get attention, that'll get clicks. And the UFC, the people who are responsible for putting on this product, are just kind of going to sit back and be like, all right, I guess we'll try to keep them apart until it's time for them to fight in a cage. You know, like, it just seems dumb that of all the people who shouldn't have to resort to, I will kill you with a gun, it should be pro fighters. You're going to get a chance to hurt him with your body in a fair, sanctioned, relatively safe environment. Is that not enough? Like, to me, if you're out here saying, I will shoot this guy with a gun, it tells me you are not confident that you can beat him in a cage fight, because that is the part that you guys are paid to do.
Is he just saying stuff, Ben? Like, when he says this about the gun, I mean, just saying
stuff. Yeah. I mean, that is some classic just saying stuff. Like, I don't think that you really planned. If you did plan to show up and murder Hamza Chimaev before the fight with a gun, I would say you probably would not broadcast that intent beforehand. You'd probably want to catch him by surprise. You also, like, you just made it into a first-degree murder beef. You're going to have a hard time claiming self-defense after all this stuff. So, like, yeah, he obviously is just saying stuff. The thing that I guess is telling is that he's just saying stuff in a way where he's going, this works, right? Yeah. Like, this, and you can see it with Sean Strickland. You can see it with Bryce Mitchell. You could see it before with Colby Covington, where you have these guys who are sitting around and they're going, like, I'm going to get attention for myself by saying, like, really extreme stuff. And then they also, you've definitely seen this with Sean Strickland, they get to a point where they feel that attention flagging. They feel it slipping away because we go, we've heard this extreme stuff. We're not shocked by it anymore. Yeah. We get used to it rather quickly. And then he goes, well, then I have to come up with something more extreme. I have to come up with something like crazier than the last thing. You can see Sean Strickland over time doing that. And it seems like an intentional choice and like a conscious effort that he's making. But it kind of leads us here to where he has to like threaten murder in order for it to feel like he is continually upping the ante.
Do you think that poor Miguel Torres like is like,
yeah, here's there's a good example.
Yeah, it's like a guy who basically got canceled by the UFC for whatever he wrote on Twitter, right? Like it was a couple of tweets or something like that. And then you cut forward this amount of years and here we are. It's crazy. I remember when that deal with Fox. So there was that chase for legitimacy within the sport for the longest time that everybody was in on. And when they got the deal with Fox and they were going to do that first show, I remember writing a piece. It was like 2011, I think, at the very end of that year with Dos Santos and Velasquez, writing a piece basically that says with greater kind of mainstream access and like the more eyes and the more scrutiny that will come to the sport. Right. And then I remember, you know, you're mentioning the Brock Lesnar stuff that was going on with Frank Mir, and remember thinking of stuff like that, like this won't fly anymore. You won't be able to get by with some of the things that MMA could happily kind of conceal within its own bubble. Like you just thought that stuff would be weeded out. What we never could have anticipated was that as time has gone on, that the world would meet the UFC's wildness. Yes. You know what I mean? That's kind of what's happened. Yeah. I always think about Miguel Torres because, and I feel like there was a couple of others. I know that Forrest
Nate
Griffin.
Nate Diaz, right? Like he had a homophobia something.
Nate, yep. And I remember Forrest Griffin got in trouble for a minute there, like for something he said. And I mean, it's just, it feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. It like, you know, I'm listening to both of you guys speak here and I'm kind of reminded that even when we were getting into this sport in the early 2000s, it was an outsider kind of thing. And as Ben says, there was things that happened in MMA back then, and maybe not like speech-wise, but there were certainly things that happened in the sport where you'd be like, whoa, this couldn't happen in any other sport. Like, this is kind of the beauty of it. Is there any chance that, like, it's just always just been this, Chuck, and we're kind of aging out as, like, you know, like we're turned into these kind of older heads, and the younger people are enjoying it for the same reasons we are. We just can't vibe with the things that this guy is saying. Or is that too simplistic a view of it?
It might be a little too simplistic. I just don't remember. I mean, I talked to a lot of fighters back in the day. Like, you know, you do these big features because that was the thing. They didn't ladle out their personalities and their lives on social media. So that's what our job was. You'd go talk to these guys. And I just don't remember hearing people kind of take it to such sadistic kind of extremes. You know, I don't remember people doing that. You always would come across the kind of guy who, you know, you could tell was a little more sinister minded than the normal pro athlete, you know, but there were more pro athletes and either that they're putting up a facade. I do think there was a little bit more of a fear of repercussions. They did not want to get in trouble from the UFC, which was the only game in town once they snapped up Strikeforce and all that. Like, I think there was play by the rules, but we don't really know what the rules are. And there was, you know, those spot examples of guys getting in trouble. I just don't think people want to jeopardize themselves. But like Ben mentioned, I think somewhere around the pandemic, you know, probably to do with also with just the presidency, like the lunatic nature of so much that goes on in the world, much less the sport, that Dana White was at some point just was like, hey, man, I'm not going to be the one policing this. And I think you're dead on, by the way, with saying like you can't, if you hold that standard with Miguel Torres, now you got to do that to Conor McGregor. You know, and I really don't think that the UFC was prepared to deal with, because remember, Conor was saying crazy stuff too, man. There's a very dark lead up to that fight, and you know, the UFC just kind of stood by. In fact, they used the, you know, as part of the B-roll and the, you know, they used a lot of that animosity to build the fight. I mean, that's just kind of where we're at in the sport.
Well, that's a good point you've made there, Chuck, and it's a great segue into a conversation about that fight. Conor McGregor v. Khabib Nurmagomedov is the biggest UFC fight of all time, my biggest pay-per-view sales, most cited fight ever, probably due to the sinister nature of the build-up and then the aftermatch, which saw Khabib swooping down on Dylan Danis, as you said earlier. I thought Rick made some great points when we discussed this on Wednesday, because the reality of the situation is this is compelling more people towards this fight. More people are now interested in this fight with a looming threat. Is it tongue in cheek or is it not? You know, you get into that in your piece, Chuck. But like, is this the problem, Ben? This sells the fight in a way that we've seen done before on the most successful pay-per-view of all time for the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it in terms of Arman Tsarukyan, right? And how he has managed to make himself a thing with the stuff he's doing completely outside of the UFC. Like, he's not really getting a ton of emotional help by the UFC. They seem like they're content to ignore him to a certain extent. And he has made himself into a thing. And part of that thing is you want to see him at these wrestling events, or you want to see him show up and have these face-to-face interactions with other fighters, because you don't know what he'll do. He seems like he is not at all worried about consequences. He is not worried about the laws of man or God. And he is out there just doing whatever. And that does create interest for people on a certain level. You know, that's the whole thing that he's done. I also was thinking about it when I saw a video of him, like an old video that resurfaced of him and Bobby Green, King Green, I think he was still Bobby back then, getting into it in a hotel lobby, as UFC fighters will often do in many hotel lobbies across the land, almost knocking over a Christmas tree display at one point in the hotel lobby. And I remember watching it and being like, at what point does the UFC start to have trouble finding hotels that are like, yeah, man, we don't care about the group rate or anything. It's not worth it. It's not worth it to have you guys. Yeah. It's just like, you know, guys will be in there in the breakfast buffet, throwing things at each other, hitting each other with hand sanitizer. They're brawling in the lobby. There's some businessman from Wichita in town for a conference, and he's checking in and he's looking over, and Bobby Green and Arman Tsarukyan are brawling with all their boys in the lobby. And he's just going, what the hell is this? And they're like, yep, UFC staying here this weekend. That kind of stuff where I was just like, I understand how it's an appeal where it feels like, who knows what these guys are going to do? You better tune in Saturday night and watch to find out what the hell's going to happen here. It seems like this thing is a powder keg waiting to go off. And yet, at times, it does go off in ugly, bad ways. And I don't know. You can only do this for so long before something really bad does happen. That Conor McGregor thing with the bus was a good example, because you remember Dana White's reaction at the time, where he was just like, would you want to be in business with Conor McGregor after today? I'm disgusted. Most terrible thing I've ever seen in this sport. And the answer was, we're dying to be in business with this guy. And you know what? The bus attack won't even end up being the worst thing he's done, and we still want to be in business with the guy. And of course, we're going to use the bus attack footage to promote the fight, all this sort of stuff. And I understand that if you're a promoter of fight sports or pro wrestling or whatever, you look at just what they give you to work with, and you go, well, we're not going to waste good heat. You know,
right.
if it's there, we're going to use it. That's just like page one of the promoter playbook. But at some point, people are going to turn around and look at you if something bad does happen, and they're going to be like, so this was all just like a slowly brewing thing that you watched and highlighted and did nothing to even try to like tamp down, and then it blew up, and you're going to have at least something to answer for there.
You know, it helps a lot when it's a, you know, if it's Sean Strickland, he's going against Duplessis and he's talking like this, which I know he did, there's going to be a low grade of like, who cares? Because the fight itself isn't that compelling. It really helps. You know, when Chael Sonnen was going after Anderson Silva and he was saying all this crazy stuff about Brazil, he was picking on a guy who was the GOAT, you know, like he's going to, he's going against a guy that it was inconceivable in some ways that he could beat. And then you get like the same thing with Conor McGregor and Habib, right? Like you've got a guy mouthing off. He's kind of poking the one bear in the realm that you're like, you don't want to mess with this guy, man. You just do not want to mess with Habib. And I feel like if this has any similarities, it's in part because of that. I don't know what the line is on this fight, but Strickland has got to be a fairly sizable underdog. And he's doing the exact same thing to a guy that people view as kind of the boogeyman of the division right now. And that's like when you're talking about like the psyche of it, if it trickles into a larger sphere of people, they're going to be like, oh, my God, this is crazy. We'll see, because come fight week, I feel like we haven't even seen anything yet. We're going to see whatever this looks like. But part of it is what starts to stand out is like, hey, isn't Khamzat the best dude? And like you're going to start to have this feeling among casual audiences like that guy's supposed to be invincible. Why is this guy doing this? And that is part of the reason, right? Because he doesn't fear is the consequences of it. And I feel like that when you have a guy who can talk like that and he jumps in and there has to be this moment of reckoning that's coming up on Saturday night and it's like that becomes a compelling reason to tune in.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point though, Chuck, because I remember my CME co-host Chad Dundas bringing this up when Conor McGregor was doing it to Habib, and he was saying, hey, some people don't play.
Right.
So like you're doing this thing where you feel like, and like what we heard Conor say on kind of the hot mic moment during the fight, where he's just like, I'm just selling the fight, mate. Like, it's just all for like promotion and everything. And Habib is elbowing him in the face and being like, you want to talk? Let's talk now. And there was a reminder that, you know, you're out here, you're kind of seeing this as like, this is part of my characters, as part of what I do. Some people don't play that way, bro. And people who grew up in Chechnya might be some of those people. They have been in some situations that you haven't been in. They have seen things that you haven't seen. They don't play that way. I mean,
he boarded a plane to Dublin to confront Conor McGregor.
Not only did he fly to Ireland, got so mad he flew to Ireland. To hear him tell it, the reason the plan didn't work is because when he got off the plane and they're like, so business or pleasure? And he's like, I have come to beat up Conor McGregor. And they were like, well, kind of feel like we can't let you in now. Kind of wouldn't be doing my job if I just said, welcome to Dublin. Remember, we drive on the other side of the road here, you know, like, so, but like, in answer to your question though, Pete, about like, how is this a new thing? Or we just make it too much of it because we're the old heads. I mean, I will point out, like, it's not like boxing has never seen this stuff before. I don't want to.
They Wilder.
Someone famous. I don't want to wade outside of the outline or anything here, but I got a piece coming up soon on Sonny Liston. Sonny Liston pulled a gun on Muhammad Ali in a casino because he got sick of him. An actual gun. He did not do it, because he thought cameras were there or because like he thought it was going to help hype the fight. It was because Muhammad Ali kept following him around, chirping at him. And he went, I've had enough of this. And Sonny Liston was one of those people who does not play. And so, yeah, and that stuff can easily go too far. The thing I wonder, especially about Khamzat and Sean Strickland, is you're doing all this stuff. I didn't understand what Khamzat was saying about how he didn't shoot chickens. So he wouldn't I was like, is that a reference I'm not getting? But
something was lost there.
There is a chance when you build up this intensity beforehand, and then when they are in the same room, in the same hotel, and at weigh-ins and stuff like that, neither one of them is going to want to back down, and you can get into some really dumb shit really easily. Yeah, because nobody wants to back down. Everybody has to be the tough. It's the same way the UFC wisely realized, like, don't let anybody put their hands on anybody else at weigh-ins, because even if somebody else, if one guy goes up and shoves the other, even if you think it makes for good B-roll to help sell the fight, the other guy's going to feel like, I can't let him shove me. I have to do something greater than that in a response. And it's just this like tough guy bullshit that they get into, and they can't not engage when the other guy comes to it with it. Like, so I think that that's where you can find yourself in some real trouble, and especially if I'm the UFC staff and I'm like, oh, okay, so this is all good promotion and it's good hype, and then you're going to want me to throw my body in between these guys. You're going to want me to, like, my whole week has to then become make sure they don't happen to share an elevator or run into each other in the hotel lobby, because that seems like a nightmare, honestly.
Remember Dave Schaller, like his big moment between yeah. poor Dave. Do you ever see that? That you're saying like the, there are certain guys who don't play around, and I always think of that Key and Peele's whatever their name yeah. are, the comedian, where they're like they're talking, and one guy's like, when you're breathing through a tube, and he's like, wait, he knows we're just talking, right? Like, it's just that's what it reminds me of.
It's am funny. I a sick fuck that I want to watch this fight more because of this joke?
Yes. but you're not alone. I feel like that's going to be like, I feel like we haven't scratched the surface. I mean, what Ben just talked about is why Fight Week will be sort of entertaining is just because how do you one up what's already been done here? You know, and if you get into this kind of stubborn standoff where I'm not backing down, you know, I feel like something is likely to go down. It'd almost be anticlimactic if it's a quiet fight week now, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that Sean Strickland is holding himself to something here that will at least try. He will at least try to make this into something.
Also, you mentioned what are the odds on this fight. Hamzat's about a 5-1 favorite.
Yeah.
It varies a little bit according to the sports books, but Hamzat going off at about -500. You could find Sean Strickland at around like +410, you know, somewhere in the plus like high 300s or something like that. But odds makers don't expect it to be a terribly competitive fight. And so doing all this, and it like I hesitate to give Sean Strickland credit for too much strategy, because it seems like he is just saying stuff, is just out here trying to say the wildest shit he can think of. But I'm like, are you thinking, hey, if I make him mad enough, maybe he'll forget to do the stuff and like he'll forget to take advantage of the very obvious technical aspects of his game that he has that I don't really have as much. I don't know. If so, that's a big gamble. We saw how that went for Conor McGregor. You might just get held down and tenderized for a lot longer than you need to. You might end up in a what's my name situation, as long as we're referencing Muhammad Ali. But I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that Sean Strickland was just like sitting around going, this guy is going to wreck me. I need to make him so mad that he makes a mistake. I don't really think that's it. I think that Sean Strickland has just bought in so much to this idea of himself, and he can't not do it.
On the flip side, if he does win, right, if Strickland does this, if he draws more eyes and he builds the kind of thing we're talking about and goes in there and wins, can you imagine the 180 that people could do again? Because they did this a little bit with the Izzy fight. Suddenly he became almost like this cult figure for a minute, you know, where we're like, oh, we had him all wrong, you know? He's a misunderstood fellow, all this. It's going to switch so bad because we haven't seen something like that, right? We haven't. The guys that we were talking about, Sonnen came close 4.5 rounds before he went up. That was one of the reasons that was so epic. But Conor McGregor didn't really, you know, he didn't really
compete. Nearly stuffed that takedown, man. Nearly stuffed that takedown.
And I mean, technically won a round, right? So I guess there's silver linings to be found. But I mean, if Sean Strickland actually goes in there and does this, it's going to be very interesting to hear how, you know, to partake in how this all unfolds. Because I feel like he's going to get that kind of thing again, where suddenly people are going to like him for being audacious again. You know what I mean? It's going to switch.
It is crazy, though, to think about like some of the stuff Chael Sonnen said about Anderson Silva and about other Brazilians. And at the time, we were going, whoa, man, you're kind of stepping over some lines here.
He did not
be careful.
That bus a carrot.
Yeah, feeding the bus a carrot thing. The thing they used to say about Anderson Silva, where he's like, oh, this guy wants to bow to people. He doesn't come from a bowing culture in Brazil. If you bow, they knock you on your head and steal your wallet. All this kind of stuff. You know, he was doing that, and we were going like, oh, I don't know, man, watch out. And it's like, that is so tame compared to where we are now with some of that stuff. It's a sign of just how much the culture has shifted. Also, though, all his talk about Brazilians did lead to one of my favorite moments of him and Vanderlei Silva riding in a van together. And it was a classic where Vanderlei told him, in Brazil, we have a saying. And I went, oh, here we go. Here comes, I love a Brazilian saying. And the saying was, if you have respect, you get to keep your teeth.
I thought it was sometimes a man's mouth get his nose broken. Is that not what he said?
Well, that might be a different one. I mean, there's a few different. I mean, the one I still don't understand is, I think Jose Aldo maybe was talking about playing dead and about how sometimes you have to play dead so that you can. And I'm gonna clean it up for him a little bit. Sneak up and sodomize the gravedigger. And
Jesus Christ.
That's the clean version.
Yeah, that's a good one. Have you guys heard the one about the lion? the lion on the hill, and all the little lions come up and start bothering him, nipping at his toes.
It was so
I had the pleasure of going back and rewatching that, and I was like, my God.
It's ridiculous when you actually read that. Make sure you go and read Chuck's piece to get to really get into that, because it is fantastic. Lads, another fight, this time a title fight, happening in the division where Chimaev and Strickland used to ply their trade. It's a welterweight division. Of course, we know that Islam Makhachev is the champion of that division. It seems as though Ian Garry is hinting towards him being the man who has got the title. You saw the boys in the back yesterday speaking about Morales. Where does he go from here? Because all signs point towards Ian Garry getting to challenge Islam Makhachev for the welterweight title. I think he is very deserving of this fight. I'm actually really, really intrigued about the fight from an IQ point of view, because I think the one thing that Ian Garry has shown me that I wasn't really so much aware of from his days before the UFC is that he's just an outstanding IQ. He finds a way to win fights, but that is easier said than done when you're coming up against the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, that is Islam Makhachev. Ben, first of all, do you think it's the right fight, Ian Garry to fight Islam, and do you think he has a chance?
I'm going to answer the second part first, because I feel it is easier to answer, and the answer is probably not. Probably not. I mean, we've seen crazy stuff happen in this sport. I know I've definitely been way wrong before, where I think somebody doesn't have a chance and then they go out there and they win. So it has happened. When I look at just like stylistically, it seems like that's a uphill climb for Ian Garry. I understand the matchmaking, though. Like, I can understand why you would choose that right now. You, especially the UFC's title fight matchmaking seems to have shifted a little bit this year and in recent months, just going and thinking, who has a name that they can bring to this fight? That seems to be one of the most important things. So the rankings matter, except for when they don't. And they're looking at it and saying, like, all right, what can we sell? What can we plausibly put out there that we can hype and get people interested in and maybe sell some Paramount Plus subscriptions? And I can understand how Ian Garry fits some of those bills. I close my eyes, Pete C. I try to picture a path to victory for Ian Garry. What does it look like? Does it look like 5 very careful rounds in which he gets to do his stuff from just outside the reach of Islam Makhachev? Or does it?
I'm thinking. Yes.
I mean, that's got to be it, right? And then, but the problem is that like Islam is so good everywhere.
Yes.
That it allows him to be very, very aggressive in a way that not a whole lot of other people are. And I think it gets a lot tougher to do that. Like, I remember somebody once making a great, like, this flow chart about fighting John Lineker, who would always be so aggressive and so hard-hitting, and it was just sort of like, all right, he's right in your face, he's pressuring you, what do you want to do? And you're like, well, maybe I'll jab and move. And you're like, nope, he's still with you. What are you going to do now? And you're like, well, I got to hit him with something hard to make him respect me and back him up. And you do that, and the next thing you know, you're in a brawl with John Lineker, which is the last place you want to be. And it's kind of like that with Islam Makhachev, where you're just like, he's not going to consent to letting you stay on the outside and avoid him. He's coming to get you wherever you go. And so then you're going to end up in a situation where you're like, do I either deal with that and try to turn his aggression into my offense, or do I try to do something that makes him stop and makes him back up? Because we've seen people try both, and none of it has come anywhere close to working.
Yeah, do you guys get the sense that, you know, if you see in the first couple minutes that is maybe the first minute that Islam just does something very simple, like take him down, that you'd be like, oh boy, here we go. Because it feels like one of those things, right? Like you're like, okay, I got something special for him. And then right away, that specialness goes out the window. You know, I feel like
isn't that happened with Dricus du Plessis, right?
Exactly,
isn't that how you,
right.
Because that's exactly how right. I felt. I was like, he's going to do a little better in the wrestling than people think.
Right.
Nope.
That's what I thought.
Nope.
Yeah, we
right
talked
down.
About that. I do think Ian has like got a decent like takedown defense, you know, but at the same time, you remember the Shavkat fight, like where the couple of takedowns resulted in something like 12 minutes of the fight time was in his control. And it's just that vision in your mind, right, of that fight. And I know that's a very super tough opponent as well, but you're like, you think about that and then you think about the custody that the Dricus was in that fight with the title fight with Islam, and you're like, ah. It's tough not to see that, right? Like, you're just like, it feels like this is a recipe for the same thing to me. Yeah. Obviously, what he did against Jack Della as well. And we're going to be talking about Jack Della soon with Prachis. It's a really, really tough fight for Ian. And honestly, like the biggest issue I see for Ian is he hasn't even fought that type of wrestler before. You know, when you look at his UFC opponents, they've mostly been playing in his wheelhouse. You know, they've been trying to strike with Ian, and he's so slick from the outside, as we've been pointing out. I just haven't ever seen him fight a guy who is predominantly known for just taking you down at will. And I guess that is the big question coming into this. Of course, he's been working diligently with Shooterbox and Damian Maya, but these Dagestani dudes, man, especially off that Habib lineage, it's like jiu-jitsu does not work on them. It's like, no, we're playing a different form of grappling here today, and your Kimura will not work on me. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how it shakes out. If that is the fight that we think it is, the next welterweight title fight, there is two fantastic welterweight fights this weekend in Perth. It's very early for you guys. And Ben wrote in his mailbag this week. And very, very kind of illuminating passages I was reading in this mailbag. You guys can check it out on Ground. But the question was posed to Ben, will you watch this fight? And Ben spoke about the beautiful experience he had in Melbourne. I was there also during that fight, and I had a similar experience. I was like, wow, the whole day is ahead of me here. You can probably imagine what I did with the rest of that day. But Ben, you mentioned a blonde teacher that you met, and I'm like, I can't just rush over this. What the hell happened there?
Your eye.
You know, I'll tell you the full story over a Guinness someday, but
flip that G.
You know, once the fights, if they start early on a Sunday morning and you finish up in time to have a nice leisurely lunch, and then you realize like, oh, I could go see some of the nightlife in Melbourne and maybe you make some friends, maybe you have some memorable experiences. That's all I'm saying. The question was, will I set my alarm to get up and watch this one? And I was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Just avoiding the question. He's avoiding the question.
Listen, there's a good version of the story that I can tell you, and then there's the version of the story that's fit for the crack, and you just heard that version of the story.
Fair enough.
I enjoyed Melbourne. I had a great time in Melbourne. I'd be happy to go back someday. The thing is, you ask me, like, will I wake up so early in the morning to watch this thing? And I go, I see this as an opportunity. This is a great thing for me. It's a great thing for the Australians to finally get to watch some UFC on their own prime time Saturday night and get to see what that feels like. We've been asking them to do this Sunday morning stuff for so long. But I go, hey, what you're telling me is that I could wake up in the morning and the fights will already sort of happen. And I can then, I don't have to like wait around all day trying to like avoid spoilers. You know, it's you know how that can be difficult. You're like, oh, should I like open up a social media? No, I'm as soon as I do, I'm going to see some spoilers or whatever. I don't even have to try to avoid the spoilers because I can wake up, I can make a cup of coffee, I can sit down, I can watch the fights. I don't have to go to any effort to avoid finding out what happened. And I get to skip through the enormous amount of filler that is on these Paramount Plus broadcasts of the UFC Fight Night event. I just get to go straight to the fights and sit there and watch it. To me, it's kind of the ideal way to watch it. Sit down, cup of coffee, maybe a muffin. You like watch some muffin. Fights. I like a good muffin.
Yeah.
Get into some lemon poppy seed over here. Sit down there, watch it, skip from one fight to the next, and it's no problem at all. Like, I think it works out for absolutely everybody, and I'm totally into them doing it this way.
Chuck, are you going to wake up, set your alarm to watch UFC Pair?
My son wants to, you know, I think he sees the adventure in that, but I don't
tell
really
him 20 years later, I still don't see the adventure. I do it every fucking weekend.
I probably will do something more like what Ben is doing. I really enjoy with Paramount, like now you can just go on their app and do the fight selector and just be like, okay, let's see what I missed here. Let's see what I missed here. This is the way to do it. Because you mentioned the filler, man. That just, it kills me after a while.
Yeah.
Sit through these long 20-minute interludes between fights. And then a lot of times the fights themselves go the distance and they don't have a lot of drama to them. And it's just, it becomes like a slog. So I will probably be a little bit behind the live feed here.
Do you know what? Like, this is the thing. I'm hearing you guys talking about the filler and, oh, I get to skip all this stuff. Guess who drew live blog duty for the first time this weekend?
You're nervous.
This guy.
I've never done it before. Our brilliant editor is going to talk me through it. All of you are going to be sleeping, and I'm going to be destroying the website that you built. That's what I'm in my head. I was talking to Elaine about it this morning. I was like, I don't know how to do this. So I would not trust me with this. And she was like, no, I wouldn't either.
Here's my advice to you, having done a couple of these live blogs, is the entries need to be rapid. They do not need to be a particularly dense. There doesn't always need to be a ton in there.
Things like that.
If you find a clip from social media that you can embed in there, you talk just like some update about what's happening. But that's what's going to save you in the long lulls between action, is go and find some of these clips that you can then post in there. Because like Chuck said, sometimes we're going for there's a big chunk between when one fight ends and the next fight starts. And there's only so many times we can throw it back to the desk. There's only so many times you can watch the same four commercials on Paramount Plus. You need some help there.
Watch the AI commercial for the White House card again.
Yes, yeah.
Exit to that.
Do I have to say they're back at the desk now when I'm doing it? It's the desk. They're talking.
Might give people a sense that, don't worry, if you were rushing back, you're not missing anything right now. I'll let you know when we get back to throwing leather.
Do you know what? This is all good advice, and I appreciate that. But another thing you mentioned, Ben, was how it was a bit of a brag. It was a bit of a brag. Like, I mean, I was reading this, we're hearing about this blonde teacher. We're hearing about his misadventures in the land down under. And then he just starts bragging about his dialed-in sleep schedule. And I'm like, all right, take it easy, mate. I don't sleep very well, and this is offending me.
Man, you got to get the sleep schedule dialed. I mean, first of all, let's just be honest and say, for you, PC, it's probably not going to happen. It's just you, the geographic reality for where you live and what business you're in, it's probably just not going to happen for you. And I'm sorry, it doesn't mean that the rest of us
especially if you start watching hockey playoffs.
Yeah.
You get my reluctance. I have the subscription. I have the zone. They show it here. I'm like, oh, if I fucking open this kind of worms, I'm fucking done.
I'll just keep sending you the highlights, man, via Instagram DM, because otherwise, once you get your sleep schedule good, especially, look, I'm 46 goddamn years old. The sleep schedule is pretty important at this point, because it's just like, once you get to that point where you go to bed around the same time every night, you wake up around the same time every morning, everything kind of clicks. If I start messing with that, if I do anything to mess with that, I'm going to feel it. I'm going to feel it for the next couple of days. I fought against that reality for a few years. I was like, no, man, I'm still young. I can still hang out late. I can roll right in here on 4 hours sleep, whatever, and still do the damn thing. And then I had to finally face the reality. No, you can't. You can't do it anymore. The sleep schedule is pretty damn important. You need to respect it.
I'd like to imagine you with one of those long nightcaps and a book of poetry. Fucking that.
Just for example, I woke up this morning at 10 a.m. Day before, 5:30 was the day before. Day before that, I think about 8. There's nothing, and I don't, once I'm up, I'm up. I don't, could have went to bed at 3 and woke up at 5:30. I'm like, this is just the way it is today.
You can't do this, PC. You can't
live
that way. I'm
only 23.
Well, you got time.
Here.
It's stone. 23 stone.
When I get to this age, when I realize I can't do this anymore, I'm just gonna have to retire. Just call Ariel and be like, "Listen, man, it's a good run. My body's shutting down now. It's fucking."
We had some tough ring. Remember those ringer shows where it's like you would be like, it'd be like 2 a.m. They're like, "All right, let's go to the calls now." We'd have to do a live 1 hour thing where you're talking to me. I was like, I don't know how we did that. Looking back on that.
I remember people ringing in genuinely emotional about and Edward's victory. Grown men are in tears calling the show. And I'm just like, hurry the fuck up. Please. I get it, but Jesus Christ, I can't sit through another one of these. It's a great fight, though, I have to say. I'm actually really excited for it. Yeah. And I heard the boys talking about it yesterday. And I've got to say, I agree with GC and Rick, who are kind of saying, I don't know why. I'm just really, and it's not because it's in Perth, but I'm really favoring JDM in this fight. Hmm. And I don't know if that's because of the Ian Garry fight. I don't know. I just feel like he's
Who's
more
favored?
Dynamic.
You know?
I think Protest is very, very slightly favored, but it is right. It is almost a pick'em. But yeah, I mean, I also lean JDM, but I think he's in a tough spot, man, just because a year ago was the Bilal fight, you know, where we kind of went like, all right, we can kind of get excited about JDM. He didn't seem like the next logical pick as a title fight opponent, but we're into him, you know, like, let's see what he can do. And he shows up and he wins and he becomes champion. And we went, oh, holy shit. And then now you fast forward a year later and he's an ex-champion. He's on home ground trying to sort of defend his spot in the rankings against a guy trying to come up. And all the pressure is on JDM here for a couple different reasons. Because, you know, if you lose, suddenly you've lost two straight. You go, how did I was the champion. Now I'm on a two-fight skid for the first time ever.
Muhammad. Yeah.
In the UFC. And, like, then you turn around and you kind of go, people are going to look at me like I'm on the way down. The next thing you know, you've seen fighters, they get into that headspace where they then start going out there and being like, I can't lose again. Mm-hmm. And gets to be a tough place to be. You want to show I'm still in the mix. I'm still up here as one of the top welterweights. And also you're the hometown guy, kind of like the home crowd is in favor of you. They don't want to see you come out here and get your ass kicked at home. And you know that you've been dealing with that. And like, there's a lot of pressure on him. Whereas I think Prates kind of gets to roll in here and just be like, this will be great for me if I win, if I lose. Like, if he loses to JDM, I don't feel like he just tumbles completely out of the picture. We still go, he's a fun guy to watch. Yes. He can still beat a whole lot of these people. He's going to show up smoking the Marlboros and still put on a good fight. Like, people are into it. Like, I don't feel like there's nearly as much pressure on him as there is on JDM.
You know who's not worried about their sleep schedule or hanging out and partying? Carlos Prates. That's the guy right there. He's going to show up just like you said. It should be a fun one. I do agree with you, man. I think that if Carlos were to lose, I don't think that puts him back that far, just given who he is and like the way he fights. It's one of those situations where JDM kind of had to burst on the radar, right? Like, he had to kind of come through for us in a way that you're like, all right, we got to, because I think I was picking against him just about every time. And then all of a sudden he's a champ. So it's like, he's at this point now where you lose a couple and he kind of goes back into that woodwork. You know what I mean? Like, I could see that happening for him, especially this one's tailor made for him. You know, I mean, it's a tough opponent, but putting it in Australia and, you know, if you're not going to get the advantages like this again.
Mm. My advice to him, if you lose, immediately start smoking cigarettes in interviews. Immediately. Just start ripping heaters. Listen, I'm going to be back next week.
Pouring himself a little something.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Just get the people on side is all I'm saying. Yeah. Now, it is quite a packed weekend. We have a big super fight in Japan. We have Benavidez and in a huge fight as well for Cinco de Mayo. PFL Sioux Falls. Okay, I know Ben's excited. Ooh. About Logan Storley v Florim Zendeli. Huge, huge fucking fight there as well. And of course, we have the one we've
Ben,
just
you
mentioned.
Wrote about Zendeli, right? What was his, what's the story with him?
Yeah, what was that? What now? The hoots?
I don't know. I was wondering if you ever heard of the guy, that's all.
We avoided Ben.
You know, I've written a lot of stories. It's hard to keep track of them all.
That is true. There are times we talked about this. There are times I go back where you're like, okay, what about this guy? And you look a little research and then you realize you pull up your piece from like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit. I guess I know about this guy.
Yeah.
So what are you looking forward to the most, Chuck, out of all of the beautiful action that is ahead of us this weekend?
I mean, I think the Perth card is going to be fun. It's a good card. And what is the co-main with Dariush against that kid? Like, I think that's a great piece of match. Yeah. That's great matchmaking, man. And that dude's on such a fiery roll. That should be like, that's a big test for him. So that should be a fun one too.
I'm excited about the anyway fight, honestly. I just can't wait to see that venue, Japan getting a super fight. It's on nice and early too for me, which I'm very excited about. Nakatani, like I know Lou DiBella was on with Ariel saying he can win that fight. So I'm just excited for these kind of early mornings of action. Like, I'm going to be wrapped up on Sunday after UFC Perth, ready to watch United beat Liverpool. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. Ben, what is your pick of the weekend?
I got to go with Ty Tuivasa versus Louis Sutherland.
There it is. There it is. Somebody had it. Somebody said it.
I'll tell you, one of the saddest moments I've ever seen at a live MMA event was at that Melbourne one where Ty Tuivasa got choked out. I think by Sergei Spivak, got like taken down, head and arm choked. And then he's walking, you know, bummed out out of the cage, and there's a fan standing in the front row with a beer in one hand and a shoe in the other, and was trying to offer it up like, and he was just, and he gave him a look like, bro, I can't do the shoey after I lost.
That is
like
sad.
I can't do it. And now here he is. What is it? A 6-fight yeah. losing streak that that he's on now. You put him in this fight, and you're just like, man. At this point, Taito Ibasa is not going to become a different type of fighter. He's not going to adopt a different style. He's going to go out there and try to do the thing and see if he can knock this guy out before he gets tired. And that, I feel like there's a level of human drama to that I actually am looking forward to witnessing. I hope that it's one of those heavyweight fights that gets wrapped up in 2 or 3 minutes of the first round and not the other type of heavyweight fight, because I don't think that'll play to Taito Ibasa's strengths. But yeah, that's it. That, and when I looked at this, the PFL Sioux Falls card, which I would like to think, if I was trying to make fun of the way PFL is just all over the globe from like Europe to middle of nowhere America, I would come up with something as funny as PFL Sioux Falls. But you look at like the fight card, especially like look at it on Tapology, where they show all the fighters and they show like their national flag next to them. And you're looking at this thing, man, you've got Russians, Argentinians, Brits, Brazilians, Germans, Albanians, all this. And I'm just like, this is going to be like if the UN came to Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls has never seen this level of just international diversity.
But look forward to that, my Sioux Falls brothers and sisters. Now, I do need to say, before we get into this late segment of The Crack, Chuck Mendenhall has places to be. He has to go and interview UFC champions at some
That's
point.
Right.
So, Chuck, if you need to dip out.
All right, I'll let you guys know if I need to bounce out of here.
Jordan, you can do that, right? You're capable of that. You remember what we do when that happens, right? Just making sure. It's something computer stuff that you do. You can do the computer stuff. Okay, will you
All
just,
right.
Chuck, you let him know
okay.
to computer stuff when you need to go, okay? That's as simple as that.
Okay, yeah I could do that. I could do that.
We should come up with a code word, like computer stuff.
That's my safe word.
I'm doing computer stuff on Sunday. I don't know what the, you know what I mean? It's very, it's yeah, bit of blue. What if I'm trying to watch a bit of the blue and that's on one screen and a pair that's on the other screen? You know, my brain will be... Anyway, it's for another conversation. Ben, yeah, I don't want to throw in an embed of a bit of blue into the fucking, you know, that wouldn't be good. But Ben, you have a big piece coming out this weekend. We don't know. We thought it might be up before the crack, but Al-Shadi said no. We're keeping this for a weekend supplement kind of piece, and it will be that. It is about Sonny Liston, who is one of the most captivating characters in heavyweight boxing. He is often overlooked in terms of storied careers because he was on the wrong side of those Muhammad Ali losses. But please, if you can, whet our beaks with what we can expect from this Sonny Liston piece.
Yeah, I'll tell you like this. One of the many fascinating things about the mysterious life of Sonny Liston, I'm pretty sure he's the only heavyweight champion maybe of all time that you can say this about, and certainly of anything resembling the modern era. Nobody knows for sure when Sonny Liston was born or when he died. That is wild to me that he was born in rural Arkansas at a time when you didn't need birth certificates for everybody. And he was born at home in what was essentially a shack on what had been a slave plantation. And then over the years, offered several different birthdays and several different years of birth, to the point where, you know, at one point he's asked, you know, and a lot of times the early days of him being asked how old he was were by police who had arrested him. And they were, you know, he's 21 this year. And then 2 years later, he's 20. And the same thing kept happening to him in boxing, where it's like, you know, 1950, he'll tell you he was born in 1928. 1960, he's called before a U.S. Senate committee to testify and says I was born 1932, all this kind of stuff. So like nobody really knew for sure. Yeah. Nobody knew for sure exactly even what year he was born. They got a little closer on the death, but even then, you know, as far as we know, it seems he died alone at home in Las Vegas, even though there were plenty of conspiracy theories about that, about whether he was in fact alone, whether he was murdered, all that kind of stuff. But even then they didn't know exactly what day he died. It was, you know, his wife had been trying to reach him. She was out of town visiting family, and when she came home, he'd clearly been dead for some days. And that is just sort of one of the many mysterious things about him. And especially if people out there, every once in a while, people ask us for good stuff to read, you know, good books. And I will say maybe one of the best boxing biographies I have ever read is The Devil and Sonny Liston by Nick Toshes. It's just an amazing level of research he gets into, really great writing and storytelling, and, you know, not like super long, like pretty packed into a pretty tight space. And just some fascinating stuff where you can tell at certain points where, you know, in researching Sonny Liston, he has learned interesting things about the criminal underworld of the 1950s. And he's got to throw that in there, because once you come up and you find out, like, oh, there was a mob boss who was mostly known as The Gray. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about The Gray. There's audio tapes where somebody is like wearing a wire and being threatened on behalf of The Gray. And you can get a sense of how intimidating it would be, like they're talking to somebody and being like, is that what you want us to go back and tell The Gray, that we came here and you said no? Think about that. And you're going, shit, I don't even know anything about The Gray. And no, I don't want that. I don't want The Gray to know that he should be mad at me. You know, fascinating stuff in there.
It's incredible. It's an incredible story. And I think the one thing I always think about with Sonny Liston is, like, he's such a stark contrast to, you know, a poster boy for the sport. He was everything that boxing probably didn't want as a champion, a guy who was rumored to be connected to the mafia. Just a fucking vicious dude, right? Like, just known as a bad motherfucker, basically. I'm really, really excited to read it. We have to bid farewell to the great Chuck Mendenhall, who has to do some of that journalizing.
Yeah, you know what? Usually these guys are delayed by like 10, 15 minutes. This guy is already here. So I will see you guys later.
Computer stuff.
Look forward to your piece, Ben.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to it, Ben. Thank you for staying with me here. You know, it's tough out here on the prairie by myself, you know, but I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have someone to talk to. How are, you know, these ice hockey playoffs, right? Chuck's team have gone. That kind of allocates me some space. Okay, so if Chuck's team are out, they always compete at the very latest fucking slot as well, at Denver Nuggets. I mean, Jesus Christ, I tried to stay up for the last game. I texted him this morning saying, I think it's partly my fault that the Denver Nuggets have gone out, because the Knicks game was such a blowout to an extent that I've never seen before on a basketball court. I was already kind of, you know, tired watching the Celtics and the 76ers. By the time the Nuggets came on, I was like, you know what? I just can't put myself through it. So I have a slot out. Who are my team? I know I asked you this last week, but is the series to watch right now?
If you want to follow another Chuck Mendenhall team, you know, the Colorado Avalanche are looking pretty good in these NHL playoffs. You know, the fighting takes on a very different kind of tone in the playoffs, because
I don't like the sound of that.
They will still definitely do some fighting. They'll do it in a different way, and in a weird way, they get away with it a lot more. Because normally in the regular season hockey, the fighting is done either to sort of settle scores, show you know, you're not going to put a big hit on one of our star players. There's going to be consequences for it. Sometimes it's just done to fire up the crowd. Hey, if we're losing 5-2 at home, we got to give these people something. And then you'll see it sometimes when they're mic'd up. You'll see a very congenial exchange before a face-off where your tough guy and our tough guy are kind of saddling up next to each other and being like, hey, will you give me one? I'll be like, yeah, I'll give you one. And then we're going to, as soon as the puck is dropped, we're going to throw down the gloves and we're going to get after it. In the playoffs, it's different. We're not doing each other any favors by fighting in there. But what we're doing in a lot of these series, it's a 7-game series, a best of 7 series. And hockey doesn't do that during the regular season. You might play a team twice in a row during the regular season. So to see the same team over and over and over again, night after night, it introduces this dynamic where they're going, look, we might not win this one, but we're going to go out there and lay the body big time tonight. We're going to punish them physically, and maybe it'll start to pay off later in the series. And it just creates a ratcheting up intensity that you see in some of these series. And the example that you saw really recently, it's one that I sent you, clips from the Hurricanes and the Senators, where you're just, you know, a guy is getting laid out, and then the other team's tough guys during the break coming over to the other bench and being like, next shift you get on here, I'm fucking you up. You know, there's stuff like that going on. But it's crazy that almost after every whistle in some of these series, guys are tying up, throwing hands, reaching out and just sort of, you know, taking the hockey glove and just reaching out and just just rubbing your face with it, that kind of just mean stuff that we're just doing to each other. Yeah, there's just tons of that going on. And the referees are just, the poor beleaguered referees are out there just trying to keep some semblance of order. And it's amazing. They can stand there, watch a guy reach over, pop another guy in the mouth, and they'll just be like, hey, knock it off.
Wow.
Stop that, you guys.
See, that's a sell. Like that. Like I watched the Knicks last night. They were like, oh, that forward motion he made after the skirmish, that's going to get a foul. And I'm like, they're just shouting at each other. They're just kind of pushing and shouting, you know? I don't like that. I want violence. Is Mike Malott's brother a good player?
Yeah. I mean, you hear his name, you know, he's out there, he's doing it. So like there are no not good players hanging around in the NHL playoffs at this point. So I'll say if you're looking for the series to get excited about, I would say either tonight you can catch you could be asleep, but the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Montreal Canadiens, they're locked in a pretty tight one. The Buffalo Sabres and the Boston Bruins. The Bruins are still hanging around in that series. The Buffalo is very, very excited about that one. They haven't been in the playoffs forever. Now they actually have a good team, and a good team that just sort of like early in the season didn't look good, and then they just decided to get good, and now they are. And some exciting stuff happening there. But don't worry, the Chucks, Colorado Avalanche sailed through their series. They're on to the next round, so you'll have a chance to get excited about them.
Maybe I'll just relieve myself of the sports for the weekend. You know, just get ready. Get preparing myself for UFC Perth on the live blog. Please join me on the live blog. And don't forget, of course, that we have our own feed now. And I know I've only said this week, which is pretty bad, because I know the boys in the back have been plugging their feed for a long time. So please, go to The Crack with PT Carroll, it's called. But you know, Ben and Chuck are also here. They're also the hosts of this show. So please go and rate it and say, wow, these guys are really great. That would mean a lot to me. And don't forget about May 8th. That live show that will happen directly after The Crack. But before we go anywhere, and I hope Jordan's ready for this because he's been out for a long time. Jordan, is there any super chats?
Yeah!
Oh, fuck. I get him. Big up Pete C, Hatman, and Big Time. Keep rolling. Well, Joshua Vaughn, thank you. That's really, really nice. I really appreciate that.
I like how we all have our own separate nicknames there. I guess I get to be Big Time, so I'm going to take it.
I don't really have one. It's just like a variation of the spelling of my name. They've been doing this for quite a while.
It's kind of cool, though. I like it.
Some people spell it Pete C, as in S-E-A. Yeah. I like that one, too. You know what I mean? It's an interesting one. And some people just spell it PTC, which I like as well. You know what I mean? It gives me many different outlets. Maybe I should create, like, Cactus Jack, different, you know... different kind of styles for each one of them and appear as different ones, and each one has a different personality. What do you think, Jordan? Jordan, he's just, what is he doing? Okay, thank you. Oh, he likes it.
Is that obviously Pete C S E A is your mariner, you're a pirate in that one, you know?
Or a scuba suit.
An old timey scuba suit, one of the where we have like the giant dome helmet fishbowl with the hose coming out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I like all of this shit. I'm fucking terrified of this live blog. The more I think about it,
it's going to be fine, man. It's going to be fine. It's really not that hard.
Train me in. And please, everyone, join me on the live blog if you're awake for UFC Perth. Is that our only super chat this week, Jordan? Oh, fuck. Okay. Daniel Munoz, D3J, 10 of the US's finest. Not a huge fan of Strickland, but being threatened by four people in general is clear case for legal self-defense, even more so in Nevada. Both are saying physical threats. We seem to only focus on Sean. That is a fair point. I guess
is it
Sean,
is it
Sean was saying, if they roll up on me, I'm going to shoot them. I didn't hear, you know, yeah, in fairness, Shamayev in his retort did say he'd be dead already or something to that extent, right? I don't know. Are we being unfair to Shawnee S?
No, man. He's always out here talking about how he's carrying guns with him everywhere. He's going to shoot people at the mailbox, shit like that. He's out here calling this guy all kinds of horrible names and is just like, you know, I'm going to go down in the lobby and wait for him. Like, if you're worried and you're trying to make a self-defense case, you probably don't put yourself in a situation intentionally to run into that person. I don't know if that's going to work for him.
That's fair. Another fair point. Both of you sparring there, Mr. Munoz, Mr. Folks. I enjoyed it. I'm staying out of it, okay? I'm excited, you know, for some fucked up reason. This started talking and I was like, I'm going to have to watch every media thing next week. you're always excited until something happens. I always remember when Habib scaled that fence, and we're in my apartment at the time, just about a mile this way. And my dad was there and my brother was there and we're all watching, and I didn't travel to the event. And I saw Habib going over that fence and I was just like, oh, I'm not sleeping tonight. Yep.
No, as soon as I saw that, I went, oh, yeah, there it is. We have shit-talked a little too close to the sun, it seems. And the results were kind of predictable.
And the problem is, like, it was 6 a.m. in Ireland, and then every news desk in Ireland is ringing me as the MMA guy from Ireland being like, can you go on a radio show in 10 minutes to say, is this a sport? and like, Phil O'Connor rang me yesterday. He had to do one of those is MMA a sport things in Sweden yesterday. Because obviously Shamayev there is a rooting interest. And he's like, do you want to come in and talk about Shamayev and Strickland? Hadn't seen any of it, just drove in. And they're like, oh, let's listen to this clip from Sean Strickland. He's like, ah, oh, God, here we go again. Yeah, no, it is a sport, guys. Okay? Sorry. It's still a sport, even though this shit happens. So I'm preparing myself for a lot of that for the next week. Anything else there, Jordan? Petey, your mic always louder than Ben and Chuck's. That's a you thing, Jordan. All right? I'm sorry, Hajuk and Attacko. Jordan, explain yourself. Oscar. I'm not blaming Oscar for this. I'm blaming Frank. Because Frank is just calling it in all the time. He has that contract with Boys in the Back where he can't appear on this show or appear on any show. He's so guarded about his personal life. You know what I mean? Sorry about that, Oscar. That was Jordan being back and blaming you. They try to hamstring us in any way they can, but they can't stop the crack. Crack, once it gets into your blood and into your body, it's very hard to shake it off, as people have said for many, many years.
Famously. So,
famously,
yeah.
We're all crackheads here. Jordan, anything else? Last one. Petey, you are the real PQ winner in our hearts. Can anyone explain that to me, Sleeto? Thank you very much for that. I don't know what that means. The PQ winner. Is this a young people thing where they're laughing at me now saying this out loud? It is, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm the wrong guy to ask. I have no idea.
Thank you, Sleeto. I'm sure I will find out in my mentions very shortly what that means. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Crack with Pizza Carol. Ben Folks, Chuck Mendenhall. Chuck Mendenhall had to go off gallivanting there. He's interviewing. Can I say he was interviewing? Will I say he was interviewing, Ben? Will I say?
Will you say? I don't know.
Joshua Van, flyweight champion of the world. That's what he's doing. Not, you know what I mean? Too big time to hang around here with me and big time Ben Folks. Thank you to Chuck Mendenhall. Thank you to big time Ben Folks. Thank you to Oscar Losef. Why am I holding tape? I don't know. It's because I have to tape the light here and sometimes it breaks off. Anyway, that's not the point I'm trying to make. We love you so much. Enjoy the fights this weekend. May 8th, go and buy your tickets. Make sure you watch the crack before you go to the show, though, of course. Join me on the live blog, apparently, on Sunday morning. We love you all so much. Big kisses.